You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Hello, welcome please to Telstra Customer Service. How may I be helping you?
Conform or be consumed.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history.
I heard a rumour today.
I like your rumours.
I know, as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
What is your environmental policy?
To sell Telstra.
You heard of road rage?
Yes.
What about web rage?
And within a few minutes.
Minutes.
Yeah, minutes. It's not minutes. XG, mate.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, I'm Andrew McComb. This week, Telstra have let their PR bull terrier out of his cage again, and he's certainly got his hackles up. Telstra Communications Chief Phil Burgess explained why high-speed broadband is crucial to Australia's future. He also highlighted the steps Telstra is taking to promote public discussion of broadband issues while there is still time to avoid the worst impacts of the broadband drought.
We have a broadband drought in this country because we have an addiction to regulation. And that addiction to regulation is stunting investment.
But is this just more of the same from Australia's dominant telco? Or is there some truth in the rhetoric? But the best news from Telstra this week is the price hike in wireless broadband across their complete range of products by $5, except for the most expensive one. Why? Just a word of warning for consumers. The price we pay for broadband should be falling, and the speed increasing, like it is everywhere else in the world. Telstra spokesman Craig Middleton says the price reflects the fact that it's the best product on the market for wireless broadband, and if you want to travel by first class, you'll be prepared to pay more. He denied the price rises were related to capacity limitations on the network, stating that this was a premium product. There are several hundred service providers in the market, of which very few have their own technology or hardware in exchanges. They simply resell the Telstra product, and this equates to over 90% of the market.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
Mark Diggins gives us another technological look into NextG. Microsoft hit with a whopping $1.5 billion patent verdict. Google challenges Office Online. The G9 still at Telstra's mercy, and the Australian Communications and Media Authority has launched a series of investigations into the possible breaches of local anti-spamming laws following its successful prosecution of a Perth spammer last year. All that and more on Australia's premier Tech Talk radio show, Tech Talk Radio. But before all that, let's find out what's been making news in the IT world this week.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Microsoft hit with a $1.5 billion patent verdict, Telstra introduces price hikes for wireless customers, PS3 download services bypasses retailers, Google closes a potentially devastating flaw in desktop search, and TV program delays are turning viewers into pirates. Welcome to Tech Talk News. A federal jury in San Diego has ordered Microsoft to pay $1.5 billion to telecommunications giant Alcatel-Lucent. Microsoft came out the loser in a patent dispute over MP3 audio technology used in its Windows operating system. Microsoft said it believed it had properly licensed MP3 technology from Fraunhofer, which helped develop the MP3 compression technology, along with Lucent's Bell Labs. The jury disagreed, however, and assessed damages based on each Windows PC sold since May 2003. A spokesperson for Alcatel-Lucent said last week the case could have broader implications if Alcatel decided to pursue claims against other companies using the widespread MP3 technology. In a surprise announcement by Telstra last week, prices on Big Pond wireless plans will be raised across the board by $5, with the exception of its most expensive $200 plan. Big Pond will also reduce the value of its half-price promotion, which previously offered customers half-price for the first 12 months of a two-year contract. Under the new rules, customers will only get the first 6 months half-price on a three-year contract. The announcement came just after Telstra launched its latest NextG upgrade, attracting significant criticism from industry experts who said money would be better spent invested in upgrades to Australia's fixed-line broadband network. This prompted a war of words over the speed and value for money of broadband internet in Australia. Greg Hoy from the ABC 7:30 report spoke to Mike Quigley, technology president of Alcatel-Lucent, about NextG and wireless internet.
While wireless has an important part to play in mobility and portability, it isn't going to be able to provide the tens of megabits per subscriber or per consumer that are going to be needed in the future.
The ABC also asked Greg Tilton from the University of Melbourne if he believed wireless and NextG were the answer to Australia's broadband woes.
By no means. Radio frequency is a scarce resource, so in areas where there are higher population densities, it'll become ineffective. There's still a requirement for further investment in fixed line broadband assets.
In more bad news for Telstra wireless customers, those who want half-price rates for broadband must also have a landline with their local and long-distance calls pre-selected to Telstra. Also under the new wireless plans, customers previously enjoying 10 hours usage for just $30 a month will now be downgraded from 1.5 megabits per second to 256 kilobits per second. Sony's PlayStation 3 was officially launched in Sydney last week, along with the announcement that consumers could bypass retailers and download music, movies and games directly to their new consoles. The console, which comes with a Blu-ray disc player, is priced at $1,000. Sony Computer Entertainment said that users of the PS3 will be able to download Sony movies and television shows on the console soon. The service is aimed at Microsoft, whose Xbox 360 is also capable of downloading video content using the Xbox Live video service. Observers say PS3 has an advantage with its relatively large hard drive, with some models providing up to 60 gigabytes of storage. A potentially devastating security hole in Google's desktop search product could have exposed personal files on a user's computers to data thieves. The flaw was uncovered late last year by WatchFire Corp, a security analysis provider, and Google repaired the defect within weeks of its discovery. WatchFire researchers discovered that the setup was open to a cross-site scripting attack, which lets an attacker place malicious code on the user's computer. But Google says there is no evidence that the vulnerability was exploited. Google's free desktop product was first released in 2004 and has millions of users worldwide. The system enables Google indexing and search capabilities on the user's computer and offers a fast, easy way to find emails, instant messaging logs, and other documents. And a study conducted by an Australian technology researcher has found huge delays in airing overseas TV shows locally are turning Australians into pirates. Technology lawyer and researcher Alex Malik said it took an average of 17 months for programs to be shown in Australia after first airing overseas, a gap that has only increased over the past 2 years. The findings were based on a representative sample of over 100 current and recent free-to-air TV series or specials. His study concluded that the delays are one of the major factors driving Australians to use BitTorrent and other internet-based peer-to-peer programs to download shows illegally from overseas prior to their local broadcast. Overseas services such as Apple's iTunes Store offer downloads of numerous shows from most of the major American networks, but this is not yet possible in Australia. Network 10's General Manager of Digital Media, Damien Smith, said its recently revamped website will soon offer entire programs for download as soon as they go to air. 10 has already experimented with TV show downloads, recently offering the Series 2 premiere of Supernatural as a free download 5 days before its first airing. Government broadcaster ABC also offers a number of its shows for streaming through the ABC website. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Telstra have developed the next level of technology on their NextG network.
I'm not saying that you won't get 14.4 megabits per second at 200 kilometres, but I'd say it's very, very unlikely.
Well, we're being powered by NextG tonight here on the laptop and it's going exceptionally well.
Yep.
If you're using an older browser, chances are you may not have the appropriate protection for something which someone's trying to load
That's
onto
exactly
your machine.
Right. This has just seems to have been a new strategy from the spammers.
Just this afternoon, I've got about three of them. Well, there's two sitting here on the laptop.
Well, there's a lot of options that are possible.
No comment.
I'm not going to answer that question.
Yeah. This is not a lot different, is it, to those the banking where you use someone else's ATM and then your bank gets charged for it and then they pass those fees on to you?
It's a very curious stance for them to be taking.
She says that some people have developed an obsession with their phones, and if you were spending $500 a month on your mobile phone, I'd be checking into rehab just quietly.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy. It's child's play.
Podcasting's so easy, even my little brother can do it.
Step one, download and install some podcatching software, like iTunes. Step two, find the address of the Tech Talk Radio podcast feed on the Tech Talk Radio website. Step three, copy and paste the feed address into your podcatching software, and you're done. Now every week, you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever, and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn, on a train, in a car, on a plane, at work,
visiting the relatives, washing the car.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show that is Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McCollum, and on the other side of the panel this evening, Mark Diggins and Graham Callaghan. Good evening, gentlemen. How are you both today?
Hello, Andrew. Hello, Graham.
G'day, guys.
What's news? Anything exciting? I must admit, if Dave Hughes was here, he'd be proud of me. I'm angry.
What are you angry about?
I'm angry. I'm angry about all the stuff that's been going on broadband-wise this week.
Oh, there's a lot to talk about.
Oh, boy. Yes, but I'm going to save my anger for later on in the show.
Fair enough.
After segment one, to be quite honest.
But well, coming up a bit later, we've got some noise that was made by people during the week, haven't we?
Lots of noise. Lots of noise, yes. They've let the bull terrier loose again.
Phil's at it again, is he?
Yes, the Managing Director of Public Policy and Communications with the Big T, Australia's number one incumbent telco, that is.
Yes.
Has
we all know who you mean.
He went quiet for a long period of time there, and all of a sudden he's back.
Right.
He's back. So anyway, we'll talk more about that later on in the show.
Excellent.
We're streaming on the show, as we normally do. There's the Shoutcast stream, as well as the Windows Media stream. Yep. You can visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. The little icon on the left-hand side there, just click on it. And then choose the stream of your choice if you would like to hear us live. Because a lot of people listen to us on other radio stations, somewhat delayed. Did you know that?
I did know that, yeah. There's a few stations all over the country that take it.
We do.
And even in other countries.
Yes, even in other countries. And thank you to all those people, and you know who you are. If you'd like to talk to us on the television, I mean on our radio program, you can log on to techtalkradio.com.au and fill out the form there. Or else you can send us an email to onair@techtalkradio.com.au. And say your piece, because we love hearing from you guys. And we've got a phone number too, which is 1-300-664-882. Now, I want to hear your Telstra rants tonight. Mark's in the corner there. He's been very quiet this evening. We want to crank the 1-300-664-882 number up, and we want to hear what your thoughts are, and we put them to air. Not tonight, but we have
next
to
week.
Vet them, and we'll put them to air next week and hear what you all have to say. Rather than type it, it'd be good. Just send us a ring up and leave a voice recording.
Yep, and you can leave questions or comments or anything you like there, and we'll respond to them if we can next week.
Yeah, if they're not too rude.
Exactly.
Someone rang up and faxed me in the ear the other day. I took great offence to that.
Oh.
But nonetheless, emails, yes. Feel free to send us a couple of emails if you like that too. We're live tonight, so at the feedback address. One thing I was going to talk about, there's two interesting little bits of gossip which happened to me personally during the week.
Oh, yes.
The Commonwealth Bank are releasing a little thing to do your internet banking.
Now, one of those things we were talking about last week.
Mark was talking about
it. Tamagotchi.
Yeah,
yeah.
Tamagotchi, that's
it's
the
like
one.
A Tamagotchi, yeah.
So,
a secure ID token.
They are,
or
yeah.
Something equivalent. I think secure ID might be a brand name, so something similar to that. One of those
a Tamagotchi
security
brand
tokens.
Tamagotchi's a yes.
So
it generates a random number.
It does.
Or apparently random, but not really random.
Well, it changes every 30 seconds or something, I think, I was reading in the blurb.
And when you're logging in, you've got to put that number in.
When you do a transaction of sorts, it wants to check. But it's
okay.
Unlike the National Australia Bank's version where it sends you an SMS to your phone, you must have this little dongly Tamagotchi security thing on your key ring. Otherwise, you cannot transact,
have you
my
seen
friend.
This before?
No.
Okay, I have one in my bag. I'll pull it out during the break.
You use that to get in.
We can hold it up to the microphone and the listeners
can see it. Yeah, good. That's what I love about radio, which was television. It's the Freudian slip before. but yes, they're going to, I don't know, this must cost them a fortune to roll it out, or some contractors obviously rubbing their hands with glee saying, oh, we've got to make 30,000, 300,000, 3 million, however many of those little Tamagotchi things to get to give out.
It's interesting. It must be worth their while, though, in terms of the liability that they have for fraudulent transactions.
Oh, exactly.
So they're not going to charge customers for it?
Indirectly. Not in as many words.
Okay.
So
there are some banks that actually give you that option, but you have to pay for the device at the moment.
Really? Well, the letter that I got in the mail seemed quite no surprises. But then again, there was no fine print either. So, and normally with those things comes all the fine print. But yeah, watch this space, I guess. But it's a good idea, I think. And you use them for what? Getting access into areas, into buildings and things. Is that what you use yours for?
No, mine's into the Telstra network from afar.
Oh,
so,
okay.
So if I've got an internet connection anywhere, I can get into the Telstra network using that device
and do your tweaks or whatever you need to do.
Yep.
And it's just that's part of your secure logon to log
in. Yeah, well, I mean, even today I was out of the office, but I still need to access the network, still need to access my email and that sort of thing from where I was doing my testing. And yeah, that's what I use to get in, and it's secure and it works well.
Security is becoming the big issue in technology.
It is.
A huge issue because recently Lydia Davis, who will also be having a chat to us on the show tonight, was at the RSA convention in San Francisco.
What's an RSA convention?
It's a security convention where people come along of all sort of ilks, from military, from computers, and they talk about security and the hazards of what we've got to look forward to. One of those people who was there, who gave a sensational lecture, according to Lyd, was Eugene Kaspersky. Now, are you familiar with his software?
He is a genius in the field of antivirus software.
Indeed. Indeed he is. And to the point where his software is so well respected because it goes places that others just don't seem to do. Now, from personal experience, I loaded it up on two machines.
Oh, yes. Day.
I decided I'd had enough of waiting the half hour, three cups of coffee for Norton's to actually allow me to check my email in the morning before the little green box popped up and said, things are cool.
Oh, no.
So I decided, okay, this is it. Time to trash the Norton's and roll over to Eugene's program.
How did that go?
Can I say it went very well. It even does the uninstall of Norton's for you as well.
Oh, really? Oh, that's impressive.
I thought because not undoing Norton's or getting Norton's off a machine can quite often be a bit of a handful.
Yes, I've had occasions where that's been tricky.
And especially where someone's installed Norton and then changed user, like you might have logged in as dad and you've lost the dad login, so you log in as mum and or dad too, and Norton seems to think you're being a little bit fraudulent or something along the lines there, so it won't let you deinstall anything. But Kaspersky just does the job for you quite nicely. So I installed it today, did all the updates. It took a while to do a system scan on mine, but that's good, I think, because I've got big drives. But at the end of the day, I now have a system which things were found on it in emails which Norton didn't pick up.
Okay.
Which I thought was very interesting. And considering that Kaspersky won the competition, if there is such a competition, where Vista, there's a sort of a website / independent organization called Virus Bulletin. I'm not sure whether you're familiar with it or not, Graham. They set up computers where they put a clean system on there and load an antivirus, anti-Trojan sort of package onto it and then throw everything they can at it to see how it defends it and how well it looks after it.
This is the 100% rating that you see sometimes.
That's the one?
That the antivirus manufacturers claim. Yep.
Kaspersky got the 100% big tick for Vista, 32-bit Vista. I didn't know there was 32-bit, but obviously there is. But they won hands down on the 32-bit. So we've actually secured an interview with Eugene, which we're going to...
Have we really?
We're going to talk to him in the next week or two.
Fantastic. Looking forward to that one.
Find out what's happening in Moscow.
So, well, that's great.
So, and we've got a lot of interviews coming up, which will be from afar during the course of Tech Talk Radio this year.
Yep.
Lyd's been on the case over in the United States. We've got some good Google interviews coming up from the people running Google in the US. So,
that's good.
Don't hold your breath because that's what radio is all about. You've got to be in the right place at the right time. But there's some things to look forward to. So, can thoroughly recommend the Kaspersky installation, Kaspersky, however you'd like to pronounce his name.
Very good.
All right. There was a spam email last week. Remember the one?
We mentioned it, yes.
About poor old John Howard not feeling too good, in fact, passing out and having a heart attack.
It seems that some people were affected by it.
2,500 people were affected by it, according to WebSense, which is one of the companies that monitor this particular sort of activity online. Now, do you know much about what actually happened? You did go briefly. You played with it on one of your test machines.
I did play with it a little bit.
Get the lowdown?
No, well, I think the one I got didn't have a payload in it. But obviously ones later on did.
It wasn't in it. It was where it took you to, which had the payload.
Okay, yep.
So just to briefly touch base, a large spam run focusing on email users in Australia has attempted to hook victims with a spurious story about the Australian Prime Minister John Howard suffering a heart attack. Malware carried on sites linked to the emails installed Trojans, which monitor web browsing and data entry and open a back door, allowing remote control of the infected computer. The story in the email includes brief details of a fictional heart attack, along with a lengthy biographical information about the PM taken from an online resource. So it actually had all the right details in there to sort of keep people, you know, clicking through and linking along. Links claiming to go to an Australian news source, The Australian, which is a newspaper in Australia, led to sites bearing the malware, which then redirected to an error page at the Australian site.
Yes.
Once the machine is infected, browsing and keystroke data is harvested for phishing purposes and a web server is set up on the local machine too so that they can come in and use your machine remotely. Nice people, aren't they?
Yeah, very nice of them, isn't it?
So for those of you who clicked it, and there were 2,500 of you out there, that was what all that was about. And the moral of the story, as I said last week, is watch out for rogue, bogus things like that, especially the typos. The spelling will give it away.
And how do you then get rid of something like that? Like, does your antivirus software look at that and find it? Because really, that is, it could be not a virus. It could be a legitimate thing you're doing by opening up a port, if that makes sense.
So, well, there's two different approaches that you need to take, and you need to have both of them on your machine. One is to have good quality antivirus software, as we were talking about before, either one of the big names, the Nortons or the Kaspersky or one of those. And you need anti-spyware software, which is SpyBot SD or Windows Defender. I use both of those.
I use that too.
Is Adaware a spyware type one?
Yep, Adaware from Larvasoft USA is another one that will help you to clean up spyware.
Okay.
They're a commercial product, but they do have a free version for home use.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so yeah, so we'll go looking for it and sort of challenge you and say, is this right, you know, sort of thing, and you can clean it up. Or I found critical objects or something like that.
And you may find that you need to keep these up to date manually, some of them. Windows Defender will update with your Windows updates, but SpyBot SD and Adaware, you'll need to go and get the latest updates before you do a scan. And they'll scan your system and go looking in the places where the spyware hides and hopefully track it down for you. If that doesn't work, if you're still having to, because sometimes in really bad situations that doesn't work, you'll probably need to seek some help. There's forums online where you can find experts that can help you out. There's also professional computer repair places that can help you. I know we get quite a few of those at work that we have to help people out with.
There are
with
some
the really bad ones.
There are some strange idiosyncrasies with some of these things that come along because they're normally so new that the antivirus software companies haven't
quite worked it out yet. Yeah, so but a week later.
Oh, exactly. But if in doubt, just don't go clicking those things. That's the safest and
easiest
way to do. Just don't go there.
Links in email are not safe. You can't tell whether an email, you know, you can't tell very easily without being a security professional whether an email is genuine or not. And it's easy to be tricked by a link that looks like it goes to one place and does go to another.
And
don't trust them.
If you don't know the person that sent you the email from Slovenia or the Ukraine or even from a .com.au domain, you think, who are these people? Then just go gingerly, especially if they send you a Word document as an attachment. Now, that bothers me big time.
Yes.
Because there's all sorts of nasty things that can execute in those things. But getting back to John Howard's little email.
Yes.
Unfortunately, he didn't suffer the heart attack. He's still walking. He's got a bit of competition in his electorate eye here, but we're not going there tonight. WebSense actually told us a little bit about the banks that these guys are phishing for.
Oh, yes.
In Australia, there's two, Westpac and the Commonwealth Bank. And they're amongst a list of about a dozen banks around the world from Thailand, Spain, a lot of Spanish banks, actually, Bank of America in the USA and other sort of people.
So the software it loads waits for you to go to one of those banks' websites and then tries to collect your login information as you type it.
Exactly. And it installed, as I said before, a web server on the affected machine, which allows the attackers to access that machine every time the particular machine is online.
Yep.
So just be wary of that. And it also gave some information about geographical locations, which I thought, this is getting a bit out of control. When they can see where you are on your map, they can see where the infected computers are. But anyway, WebSense. If you want to have a look, you can visit the WebSense site. And you'll never guess the URL. It's WebSense.com.
Couldn't be easier.
And they keep all those sort of good things there.
Talking about compromised security, did you hear about the hoax SMS that was sent out to about 10,000 people last Friday night in Melbourne?
No.
Connex, who runs the train and I'm not sure if they run the tram network.
But no, they run the trains, but they do the public transport.
Melbourne, have a nice SMS service to tell you if your train's running late. And they send you an SMS, you can subscribe to it, and it works quite well, I believe. I don't have it myself. However, someone was able to get in through their security and send an SMS, which...
So they broke into the computer system that sends the SMSs and sent out some fake ones.
Yeah,
apparently, well, they also did some other damage as well, and the police were investigating.
But do tell, what sort
of SMS messages did they send? Do you know?
Yes, I do, actually. It's written in here in the paper I saw today.
That's right. This is what you read on the train on the way home amongst your SMSs.
That's the one, yep. Our inspectors love killing people. If you see one coming, run.
That's true, yes. Tick. Next.
Want to bomb a train? They will gladly help. See you in hell, amongst other things. So most people would see that and you know straight away. But, you know, those are a bit unsure. The elderly and the, you know, gullible and the very young and who get it on their phones would be, terrifying.
Very annoying to know that you've given your SMS, your phone number to an organisation like Connex and then to find that it's being misused by people like that.
And even if you can see through the hoax and see that that was just a hoax email, you can see also that they've been able to get into that system. So what else can they do? Did they get my phone number from it? And that sort of thing. So that might be more of the concern rather than the actual SMS.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, there was a bank in the US, I think it was a bank, about 12 months ago that was compromised security-wise, and I think a whole heap of MasterCards. They had thousands and thousands of names and MasterCard numbers, and all those poor people had to be reissued with new MasterCards. So,
just want to mention this one. This was also on the paper. I just read this on the way home. Hot news. LG digital boxes last night across the state failed.
So the brand LG set-top boxes across
the digital TV receivers. Now, whether it's the receivers themselves or the receivers inside the TVs, I'm not sure, or both, they supposedly failed last night. And a reboot procedure was given out, and viewers said that everything would be right in the morning.
So what? Their set-top box just died. They couldn't watch telly.
Yeah, and they had
to
go revert
to analog. Oh, heaven forbid.
And LG said it was related to Channel 9 having a stronger signal than the other channels. I can't believe that something like that could actually happen, you know? So anyway, what I was getting
at was carelessly written firmware.
Yeah. Now, if it's happened to you or you know something a bit more about it, send us an email, feedback@techtalkradio.com or on air at techtalkradio.com.
If your LG box decided to restart all by its little self last night, that'd be very interesting.
I've got a no-name brand set-top box with a hard disk recorder in it. And I'll tell you what, the firmware in it is absolutely shocking. It's impossible.
Why? What does it do?
Oh, it does all kinds of crazy things. It loses time and it doesn't record programs it says it does, and sometimes it records things that it can't play back, and it stutters when it plays back.
It records and that doesn't play back.
Don't buy a cheap set-top box.
I must admit, I had been warned about that. The one I bought was not a cheap one, but it's been flawless.
Right.
Which has been good. It cost a few bucks. It's a standard def one. Mm-hmm. I don't believe in this high-def stuff just yet. And
I don't have the display technology to take advantage of it, but it's nice to be able to record programs to hard disk, though.
The Australian Communications and Media Authority has launched a series of investigations into possible breaches of local anti-spamming laws following its successful prosecution of a Perth spammer last year.
Yes.
We had Bruce Matthews in recently. We might get him back in again. There's lots to talk about, I guess. The authority's anti-spam team manager, Bruce, said the ACMA was pursuing a number of possible violations of the 2003 Spam Act as the volume of unsolicited emails hitting Australian servers continues to increase. And, oh boy, can't we all verify that.
Oh, yes.
International experts say much of the spam clogging inboxes around the world originates with organised gangs such as groups headed by the notorious Russian spammer Leo, and I can't pronounce his last name, starts with K. See, all sorts of things come out of Russia, don't they?
So, good and the bad.
Yeah, so the ACMA is onto it, and be interesting to see what happens with, be interesting to get the official blurb on the PM's dodgy email. That'd be interesting. So, yes, rest assured. The G9. Now, this will get Mark going. Basically, the telecommunications in this country is broken into two groups, us and them. Us being Telstra, them being G9. Is it fair to say?
I thought it was the other way around.
Now, Sol mentioned
it can be the other way around. I'm easy with that.
Now, Sol mentioned the other day in a meeting, I heard him say something about G9. It's been about a year, and what have we seen from them? Tell us, Andrew, what have we seen from them in a year since they made their big announcement?
Look, I've got three sheets of paper, which is sort of a handwritten note about what we've seen from them, which doesn't equate to huge amounts. But the point of the argument is, every time broadband in this country seems to hit the mainstream media, the G9 rattle the cage, Telstra rattle the cage, the ACCC rattle the cage, and Senator Helen Coonan rattles the cage. And it's becoming a bit of a, oh, here we go again scenario, don't you think?
It's like no one's in the cage.
Oh, exactly. No one's there to listen. But there's a lot of interesting issues that I think they're raising. We'll talk about that after the break. But the G9, a consortium of carriers behind the proposal to build an independent $4 billion residential broadband network, says its investment plan for the infrastructure project will succeed if it can win Telstra's cooperation. Now, from the outset...
How can it be independent if it needs Telstra's cooperation?
Exactly. Exactly. The G9 isn't independent from Telstra, but yet they're looking for Telstra's... Here lieth the problem.
Mm.
Well, not a problem. The consortium of a group of Telstra rivals that need Telstra's help, led by Optus, iiNet and Powertel, known as the G9, announced a proposal in July of 2006, and we're now February 2007. Today, the group revealed due diligence findings for the network from a report conducted by Investec, a South African-headquartered investment bank near the Nigerian border. I'm sorry, I added that bit. I was just flippantly adding things. I'm becoming very cynical in my old age, aren't I?
Are you really? I hadn't noticed.
1-300-664-882 if you'd like to vent your cynicism, and we'll play it on the air, but it's going to be one of those nights, I think. So that's the latest G9 offering. On to other things. Dell.
Yes.
You know how Dell, these computer manufacturers, are actually... Yes. Their biggest competition is really Hewlett-Packard and all the likes. Compaq, I think they teamed up together. They've finally hit saturation, so they're moving into the mall, into the shopping centre. They're going to open up little Dell shops.
Huh? How'd they hit saturation online?
Well, they can't compete anymore. They've done their television, they've done their direct marketing, and they're actually contemplating hitting the shopping centre.
They've sold all the mediocre computers they can to people who buy computers on the basis of television ads.
Have you seen their delivery? Exactly. $99 to get your computer delivered. I go pick it up.
Yeah, making big savings.
Oh, I think that's outrageous. Dell says it's experimenting with new ways to sell computer, steps that analysts say it needs if Dell wants to compete with the resurgence of rival Hewlett-Packard. Nothing wrong with your HP computers. There's one sitting here on the bench, connected up to NextG. Works a treat. What do you use? Do you use any of these sort of stuff, or do you build your own, Graeme?
Well, I build my own, and one of the things my company does is build computers. We, for more serious computers that are servers, we use IBM. And sell IBM servers.
Yep.
But I must admit, I've got one computer at home that is an HP computer.
Mm. I must admit, my main editing suite is a Hewlett-Packard workstation.
There you go.
8200. Works like an absolute gem. But they're custom built. Well, not custom built. They're out of the box. Like the Apples come. You know, they're all ready to go. Plug them in, turn them on, and it just works.
Yep.
Wonder who else said that. So that's the Dell dilemma at the moment. Leading on to probably the biggest news that I fell out of my seat when I heard it this week, Microsoft got a little MP3 problem, and it's not as if it's compatible with its iPod.
Well, little to Microsoft, not to the rest of us.
No, exactly right. $1.5 million fine. Did I say million?
Oh, I thought so, but my ears aren't that good.
Let me just say that again. $1.5 billion.
And that's US. Yeah, it's about 1.9 billion Australian.
Yeah, tis but a flesh wound for Mr. Gates, I suspect. But then again, he thought he actually licensed it correctly from Fraunhofer, who's the MP3 gurus who devised the technology. But apparently not so.
They were the people that owned it. Yeah.
Well, yes.
So who else owns it?
Well, Alcatel. Lucent, whoever they are. Alcatel, I thought, they made telephone exchanges and things
and
like that.
But
yeah. I don't know. I didn't know they made MP3 or had any rights to MP3s, but maybe they've gone to bed with Fraunhofer from the people that make MP3s.
Interesting.
So that was a bit of a... I don't know what it'll do the Microsoft stock market. Might be a blip on the radar, I suspect, the way
it'll cause them any huge problems. But
So whether they pay it or fight it...
It might make everyone else sit up.
It's not finished yet, is it?
Well, no.
I mean, they've had the judgment go against them, but I'm sure they'll appeal.
Well, what happened is the judge used the estimate of every computer that was built from 2003, which had the Windows XP operating system on it, and worked out punitive damages based on that. That's a big guess, I would have thought. So
it's a lot of multiplication factor, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
You want to get your estimate right.
Alrighty, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is our email address and the phone number for those of you who would like to have a bit of a rant. 1-300-664-882. We should throw a bit of a gauntlet down to get people to ring that number and leave us a thing. We'll give a coffee cup to the best rant. What do you reckon?
Sounds like
great. Yep, if we play your grab on air, we'll send you a coffee mug.
That'd be good. The Tech Talk Radio coffee mug, which you can see they're modelled by Tony Blair.
Yep.
You can draw your own conclusions there. But, 1-300-664-882, and that's from a fixed line anywhere in Australia. When we return, we're going to talk about broadband, our favourite hobby in this program.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the panel on Tech Talk Radio. We're getting nearer to the bewitching hour where we're going to talk about broadband. But before we do that, I had an email from Alan in Caulfield. Evening to you, Alan. He doesn't give a rat's fat about little Johnny's ticker. But he visited the site for some fun. This is the John Howard email we talked about earlier.
Oh, yeah, so he's done what I've done. He's gone and visited it.
Curiosity, yeah. Yep. Mac, he's using Mac OS 10.4.8, and he can't see any problems. I don't think you will, Alan. I think it's be one of those little things for PCs because they're absolutely everywhere. So can't be 100% sure of that. But we did try to ring Justin during the break, our Mac guru, but he's otherwise indisposed at the moment, so... Keep an eye on the forum, Graham. That's probably a good spot to talk about all those sort of things.
Someone on the forum will know the answer.
So don't be too concerned, as it says in the email here. But thank you very much for sending us an email, Alan. Love to hear from everybody. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. Or actually, he sent it to On Air at Tech Talk Radio. They both get here. Just feedback. Got the spam filter on it. So anyway, big news this week. The guru, one of the three amigos.
The guru?
Yeah, our little PR junkie. Who gets up there and rants and belts the thing on the lectern and the likes.
You mean our friend Phil from
Telstra? Phil Burgess, that's the man. The Group Managing Director of Public Policy and Communications got up there and launched a wonderful campaign called Back Telstra. Now, is that a double entendre or what? They're trying to drum up the support for Australia's largest telco. And yet, on the other hand...
So what? Back Telstra. So what he's saying is that poor old Telstra need a helping hand. Is that what he's saying?
That's right. Broadband... Australia campaign is what the acronym stands for. They've whacked an extra K in there to make the spelling sound right, so your spell checker picks it up. And then they've just bandied the name Telstra on the end of it there for whatever reason. So good. Back Telstra. Why they just didn't call it the Broadband Australia campaign, I'm not sure. But nonetheless, that's what it's called. Telstra is trying to woo shareholders and customers to join its fight against as the telco battles with the competition watchdog over broadband exclusivity. The telecommunications giant has launched a $1 million campaign in Melbourne. When was it? Last Friday, I think it was. To get the public on board in its push to loosen regulations governing broadband infrastructure. Telstra Public Policy and Communications General Manager Dr. Phil. I wonder what he's got a doctor in. Does anyone know? No?
Nope.
Yes, Dr. Phil, Telecommunications Australia was hamstrung and outdated regulations that forced the telco to share its broadband infrastructure with competitors for a price below cost. Now, Phil went on to give a lot of interesting stats, which I have some of them here tonight. Now, it drew a fair bit of interest in the mainstream media. 7:30 Report picked it up, as well as a lot of the print articles. And one of the very interesting articles was by Adam Turner from IT Wire. I don't know whether you guys are familiar with that particular magazine.
Oh, yes, ITY has always got the scoop on lots of things, yeah?
Yeah, Adam summed up the occasion by saying, "Forget watching movies on YouTube or download to your PlayStation 3. Many Australians on so-called broadband barely have the capacity to check their email, thanks to Telstra."
Yes.
Now, is that a bouquet or what? I think he's bitter and twisted. But I did actually send him an email and invited him on the show, but the people at ITY have yet to respond, so maybe next week.
I think he's got a point, though. The calling 256K connections broadband which is not fast enough to view most of the movies on YouTube, and even my 1.5 megabit connection is not fast enough to watch movies on some of the other file sharing sites, although YouTube works over it really well.
Yep.
It's not true broadband, is it?
No. Without a shadow of a doubt.
It's broadband crippled.
Now, Adam made some fairly interesting suggestions, which I have been a firm advocate of this type.
Any of them that we can say on the radio?
Oh, yes. No, he did publish them. There's one thing here which I won't read out, which is a bit risque, but nonetheless, this was published in mainstream media. If you do a search for Adam Turner and have a look on ITY, I'm sure you'll find the article of which I'm referring. But according to the survey, there was a survey done recently. Now, we spoke about this 2 weeks ago. This is probably what's got everything going at the moment, is this internet accessibility survey that came out by the Australian Bureau of Statistics.
Yep.
There is a link on the Tech Talk Radio website if you want to go and have a look at it. According to this survey, 34% of Australian homes with broadband are on pitiful, that's his words, pitiful 256 kilobits per second connections. To make matters worse, most of these homes would be Telstra Big Pond customers stuck with a pathetic 200 megabytes monthly download limit. Even Big Pond's next plan up only offers 400 megabytes per month at 1,500 kilobits per second. Now, that's a T1 connection or the standard ADSL.
I'd go through 200 megabytes by the time I've started my computer.
Good point. This is fraudband. He makes the purpose of pointing that out.
Yes.
200 megabytes works out to be 6.66 megabytes a day, which is barely enough to check your email, let alone do anything interesting on it, like internet telephony, that's making telephone calls over the internet, or video on demand.
Yes, you wouldn't have to watch much video to chew up that.
No. Now, Telstra also have decided to move their contracts to 3-year contracts. Now,
how long?
3 years.
For broadband.
Now, can I just ask a question? Like, why would anyone... You know how fast technology changes these days. 3-year contract at that speed and that limit... I must admit, in Telstra, they do say you can move around within their plans, but you have to stay with them for 3 years.
But how much has think back 3 years. 3 years ago, broadband was only barely starting to make an impact, and most people were using dial-up. Imagine if you'd been locked into a 3-year dial-up contract back then.
Unheard of. Imagine if you're locked into a three-year mobile phone plan. The phones only last 2 years.
That's it.
You know, it's the technology's going forward, and Mark's sitting here. So he's making it bigger, better, faster.
Yeah, but to be tied down to current technologies for 3 years...
Here's a bit of an interesting thing. This is from Phil's notes.
Yeah.
High speed, or the history of speed, of telecommunication speed in Australia. Morse code kicked off in 1870s at around 10 bits per second. And there's three people in this room who know how to send Morse code, I believe, but probably not anymore. Telegrams, remember those things? 50 bits per second. That kicked in about 1940. Followed by the telex, that's around 50, well, same speed as telegrams. That was in the 1950s. Fax finally cracked into the world in 1985 at around 9,600 bits per second. Remember those modems? You all used to have a 9,600 bit per second modem. Back in the...
They were large too.
They were. I put a couple on the hard rubbish collection just recently. Actually, that might have been...
Remember the modems that you used to have to put the telephone receiver on?
Oh, the optically coupled ones.
Acoustically coupled.
Yeah. Well, that's going back a ways. You're showing your age there, Graham.
They were 1,275.
Yeah. ISDN, which is a... How would you describe ISDN? It was a flavour that came out that sort of...
It's what would now be considered a fairly old-fashioned way of doing data over phone lines.
Yeah.
And lots of different services over the phone line.
Yeah, bundled up, wasn't
it?
Well, ISDN was 1989.
Voice and fax and... data all in one. Yeah.
128 kilobits per second. So you're not going to do anything, you know, outrageously, blindingly fast on that. Oh, it was very expensive at the time, wasn't it?
Expensive and good for the day. Yep.
Then along in 1993, we had this thing called the internet come along.
Yes.
That thing that would never take off.
Yeah.
56K modems in 1993. Then cable broadband kicked in around 10 megabits per second. Remember, both Optus and Telstra rolled out the dual cables in our street. One went in the ground, the other went on the pole. Yeah, they did it together.
Sometimes they went down the same street, both on the pole, one under the other.
Now, you've got to ask the government of the time whether that was such a good thing to have, you know, two companies roll out.
Was that a good idea?
Yeah, well, that's competition for you. But then after that, that was 97, 99, we saw the launch of this thing called ADSL, Asynchronous Digital Subscriber Lines.
Yes.
Asynchronous meaning that the uplink is slower than the downlink, as opposed to
I think
synchronous.
Actually asymmetrical.
Asymmetrical, yes, you're right. Sorry, excuse me. And that was 1.5 megabits per second in 1999. Then came the ADSL2 in 2005, some 6 years later, at 20 megabits per second. And then coming up after that, fiber to the node, which is to TBA.
Yes.
Whether it's going to be G9 or Telstra or whoever. But it leads to the question about the delivery of this sort of technology. There's two ways of doing it, one via cable, one via wireless.
Yes.
Wireless is here and now. But yes. I think wireless is good in 96% of the population and the likes. Even still, not everyone has mobility or needs to be mobile for their broadband internet. Why can't you have fibre to the node running with wireless?
No, you've missed the point. You must have both. Wireless, and I've said this before, I've said these exact words, wireless alone is not the answer. You've got to have both because there's just not enough physical capacity in the ether.
Radio spectrum is radio of a spectrum finite is precious. Supply. That's exactly
not
right.
Not only finite, but very precious. And you can't have everyone using that at once. You've got to use other means to deliver to the majority of people, and radio is great for the people that you can't get wires to.
Yep. Now, Mark,
Who are moving about, people who need to connect notebooks in odd places, like in radio studios, like we're doing tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And
wireless has a niche, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
Mobility factor, and it has the unique ability to provide that service where you just can't get cables.
That's right.
And it's not cost effective to run them in.
Yep. You couldn't possibly run copper out to every farm, but you could put up a big tower in the town centre. In the nearest town centre and get a lot of farms.
But see, that's where wireless, I think, would have a great advantage, is in the rural environments.
Absolutely.
Where you don't have the density of people using that network out there like you do here in the city where
you must use something better, like fibre to the node.
Now, Mark, you're because you know all about these things, let's put this into a real-world scenario. If there's an event on and there's mobile devices sitting there being used, what happens to the data? Like the voice takes priority, and what happens to the data in that finite bandwidth of channels that we've got?
Yep, the data slows down to provide access for more of the voice services. There is a minimum that you would get with it, and I can't tell you what that is off the top of my head, mm-hmm. but say it might be 384 kilobits per second switched, like packet switched. So you still get those services until effectively the whole thing's full. But data's downgraded to provide the voice services first, because that's more your emergency service sort of thing as well, always.
All right, so we're concurring with what Graham said just before. We need to run dual systems for, I guess, this country as well as every other country, where you can plug into a high-speed broadband
point. Technology alone won't do it.
The total broadband users is up 117% in the last 18 months. The total using speeds greater than 1.5 megabits per second, that's faster than ADSL1, is up from 10% to 17%. But then again, you've got to remember, we haven't had ADSL2. It's always been a bit of a sticking point
We didn't even get all of ADSL1 until after ADSL2 started coming out.
No, that's right.
ADSL1, if you remember, can do up to 8 meg.
I'm getting 7.9 at home at the moment. Oh, well done. I did open up the... I had an opportunity with my ISP to do it.
Fantastic.
And I'm getting 7.9. But hey, that in itself is a little bit misleading, depending on what the ISP does, because that's the speed of connectivity between
the modem and the telephone exchange.
What's beyond that, how your ISP channels data through things, is also a big factor.
Yes, so your ISP has got to have the infrastructure, what they call the backhaul.
Exactly. Now, if I can talk about ARNET version 3, which is the Educational Institution Australian backbone, which talks globally to all sorts of other educational institutions, they have phenomenal interconnect speeds throughout their network throughout the world. Now, I have two providers. One provider called Provider A, I can actually achieve on my ADSL2 service, which is running around about 20 megabits per second, in real time, real world environment, I can download around about 1.2 megabits per second on the modem. So that's not a bad throughput. Now, on the other provider, using the ADSL1 connection, which allegedly is as fast as ADSL1 can go, I can still only achieve around about 220 kilobits per second. So that's an Australian to an Australian connection. So what I'm assuming is that there is a network configuration which is throttling back the actual data on ISP-B as opposed to ISP-A.
That's quite possible.
So you've got to bear that in mind when you're talking about bandwidth and things like that.
Yes.
So this speed test devices too. Do you use those much at all, Graham, the speed test?
Yeah, ozspeedtest.com,
Yeah, no, they can actually tell you how fast you're going.
Yes.
Online. Just getting back to the total broadband users of 3.9 million people, 17% greater than one, which is around about 1.1 million people, are going faster than T1 or 1.5 megabits per second, which is ADSL1. 22%, which is really, I know, nearly a quarter of the population, 1.5 million people that are connected to broadband, running between the next lowest down, which is 512 to 1.5. Slower than that, 256, this is the broadband, which Adam was referring to.
Yep.
Between 256 and 512, around 20% of the population, which is 1.3 million people. So
yep.
In just that, on average, 60% or just less than that, we're seeing the majority of broadband people in Australia. But the balance, the other 41%, are still using dial-up. Now, does that frighten you? Do you believe that there's that many people using dial-up still?
Well, yeah, I do, because there's a lot of places where ADSL still doesn't work, and there's a lot of places where that's the only option. And for some people, it's all they need.
Yeah, so it comes down to a few different categories, isn't it? It's some people, they're quite happy with that. They get a few emails, they might check it once or twice a week. That's what they're happy with. Other people, it's cost.
It's cheap
for a dialer. And the third lot is they want it, but they can't get it. They want the broadband, but they're stuck with dial-up at the moment.
Yeah, if there's no cheap ADSL where they are, then they're stuck with going to expensive wireless options mm-hmm. or things like that that they can't justify.
Australia lags the world in broadband penetration based on subscribers per 100 inhabitants in 2006. In fact, we sit at number 17 in the world. The fastest is Denmark. They have the best, the greatest, the all singing, all dancing. Then the countries underneath that, from the best to the worst. Following down to Australia, we've got Denmark, Netherlands, Iceland, Korea, Switzerland, Finland, Norway, Sweden, Canada, the United Kingdom. Notice I haven't said the United States yet as we round out the top 10. Then after that, we have Belgium, then the United States, Japan, Luxembourg, Austria, France, and Australia. So that's how we're sitting in the broadband rankings. Now, that's of the OECD, the civilized, well-developed, technologically advanced countries.
Now, this is broadband subscribers per 100 inhabitants.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. So you've got to take our vast population into consideration when we have that. But trying to break it down on even Stevens, that's where we're sort of sitting.
Mm.
Now, Phil Burgess.
Not something to be proud of. Yeah, Phil.
Phil Burgess came out during the course of the week, and he launched his campaign. Sounded something like this.
We have a broadband drought in this country because we have an addiction to regulation. And that addiction to regulation is stunting investment. We're whistling past the graveyard. We've done it on water and finally woken up. We've done it on global warming and people are waking up. They've got to wake up on telecommunications because we're headed in the wrong direction, and we're headed in that direction because regulation addicts can't get over their need to tell everybody how to run things. It's one thing to make your assets available to everybody at a market price. It's another thing to make your assets available to everybody at a discounted price where you have to pay all the overhead costs.
Now, it's sounding like the same old, don't you think? We've heard that all before.
Yep, yes. It's pretty much what he's been on about for the last, 6-12 months?
Yeah, exactly. So that was Phil's launch with the Telstra Back campaign the other day. Now, Mike Quigley is the technological president of a company that's $1.5 billion better off at the moment, Alcatel-Lucent. He's the Australian rep in this country. So this is what he had to say.
What's a little frightening is we're seeing a rapid acceleration of deployments of fibre-based networks all around the world, whether it's Japan, Korea, Europe, US, Canada. We haven't even started that yet in Australia. And there is a lead time. It takes quite some time to get these networks built. So not only are we 17th now, but we're likely to fall further behind unless we get on relatively quickly now and start building these high-speed networks.
Do you agree?
Yes.
Absolutely. There is a lead time, and it takes a while. Now, he has a vested interest, because I'm sure he'll sell more equipment to Telstra and other providers if we
go down
this path.
He
so
is
he's got to keep that in mind.
He is the provider. Well, their company does provide all that sort of stuff, as we discussed mm-hmm. earlier.
But he's true. He's right in what he says, that if we don't start soon, then we'll just slip further behind. Whether we care if we slip further behind compared to other countries, who knows? But more about what's good for us, and well, do we want it now?
We have a federal election coming up this year in this country, and I think we're all talking about water, as Phil said, rightly so, in his yes. piece. I think telecommunications is going to sort of slowly creep to the forefront of this next election too, in respect to broadband. So,
well, I hope that it factors into people's thinking, at least to some degree, because I mean, it's not something to be proud of that as Australia generally and we're early adopters, we love the new technology and we use it and embrace it, and to be 17th on the list. You know, something somewhere isn't right.
Okay. Here's the Senator Helen Coonan's response to what's been going on this week. She's the federal, or her portfolio is communications. And she's going to have an interesting job in front of her, I think, leading up towards November.
I think we really need to deal with the facts and not Telstra's rhetoric. There is no doubt that we need to do better here with broadband, and we have a plan to achieve that. But it won't be at the expense of killing off all the competitors and hurting consumers, which is what Telstra will propose with rolling back competition. Make no mistake that what Telstra is proposing is all about commercial self-interest. It's not about the national interest. And what we have to do is to ensure that consumers don't get dudded on the way here with major companies battling each other.
Them's fighting words, if I'm not mistaken, between the federal government and the number one incumbent telco in this country.
She's right, though.
Could I hear, though, from those three people, they're all saying the same thing. We've all got a problem. They're all saying that. It's just about which way we go about fixing that problem.
Mm-hmm.
And Telstra saying, we want to roll it out, but we don't want to have to sell it to everyone else.
But Telstra are also saying, we don't want any rules.
Yep,
We don't care about people we're not going to make money off.
Yep. They didn't quite say it in those words.
But that's the end effect, isn't it?
I'll agree to disagree with you on that one. But let's just take it to the extreme. Let's have no regulation for a minute, all right? Take it to the extreme. Why couldn't you have no rules and regulations, and Telstra then go and roll out wherever they want to, and they charge whatever they want to because there's no rules and regulations on this, and the consumers would then, as Helen Coonan said, be complaining, but at least they'd have access to it, okay? Then G9 come along and say, gee, Telstra's making a fair bit of money out of this. We're going to roll out our own network, and we're going to undercut them, you know? And then there'll be a competing network, and the competition keeps the prices low, and that's...
I'll tell you where the flaw is in that.
Okay.
What are Telstra doing at the moment with ADSL2? Telstra have got ADSL2 in almost every telephone exchange in the country.
Can I also add that ADSL2 is unregulated? According to Graham Samuel from the ACCC.
Correct. And this is why. This is the result of that.
Mm-hmm.
They're not turning on ADSL2, even in exchanges where they've got the equipment, unless another competitor goes into that same exchange, spends the money, puts their own infrastructure in, and as soon as someone else has spent the money, Telstra start competing with them.
That's competition. That's what it's about. No regulation and competition comes in.
Why not turn it on? To the consumers to
because
which they can
Telstra
supply it.
Supposedly is forced to then resell their
but they're
hardware
not forced to. ADSL2 is unregulated.
Well, I think that's wrong. I don't think that is the case because someone will come and resell that service, that ADSL2 Plus service, using Telstra's wires and Telstra's equipment. So
Telstra
they come and run
sell
their
it.
Own set of wires, their own everything, do they?
They come and install their own equipment in the exchange. The only shared infrastructure is the copper lines from the exchange to the households.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, where Telstra have already got the equipment, don't they switch it on? They're waiting to competitors to go in so that they can then compete against them, drive them out of the market.
The simple answer to that
is in any battle, Telstra are going to win.
The simple answer to that is that there is a commercial plan.
Yes.
Which is dictating how they choose to roll their stuff out.
Now, that is
up to any business to roll it out in the way that they see fit. It may be detrimental to the consumer
because in this case, that's
the way it is. But that's mm-hmm. as a private company, and Telstra is nearly there. They're nearly all the way there to being a private company. They can choose to do what they want to do.
Oh, and they've certainly got to do that to look after their shareholders.
And as Mark says, consumers can vote with their feet. It's just unfortunate that if the only DSL service or internet connectivity points you can get is via Telstra, then you just have to wait until market forces allow you to choose something else. Now, in the city...
Why would another provider go in and put ADSL2 equipment into an exchange where the very next thing they know is going to happen is that Telstra's going to turn theirs on and start competing with them?
Yeah, well, and the answer, what's wrong with that? That's competition. And if you took the G9 scenario, that would be bigger than Telstra.
Can I answer that question? I've got an answer to that question.
On. Yeah.
Let's look at every other ADSL plan in this country by any other telco. What would you say would be the minimum bandwidth, you know, the data allowance you could get on one of those DSL packages? About 3 gig? If you choose any, pick AANet, pick
anyone
internet,
other than Telstra, yeah.
Anyone other than internet.
1 gig it is.
1 gig? Mm-hmm. Okay. Telstra's minimum entry level is 200 megabytes of data, as we discussed earlier on today.
Yep.
Which is sold to people who don't understand what they're buying so that they can be charged massive amounts of excess data fees.
Now, two more questions. The first question is, if you overused your allocation of your 200 megabytes,
yes,
let's call it a gigabyte on any other service,
yes,
how much would you pay? How much would you expect to pay for that indulgence?
On many other services, what you don't pay any extra, you just get your speed turned down for the rest of the month.
Or
not many, that's not the majority, that's the minority.
You would pay around about $4 per gigabyte.
Right.
Fair to say? Can I suggest to you that Telstra, on their $200 meg and 400 meg plans, charge $150 per gigabyte.
Yep.
Now, if that isn't market forces where the consumer can go, hey, whoa, look at this, then the market forces are playing effect. Now, when another company rolls out ADSL2 in another exchange, then theoretically the consumer can vote with their feet and move if they want, and that's market forces in action.
Yes.
So... sure, Telstra should turn on their stuff and let people use it if they want to use it, and then competition will come into those exchanges and market forces will prevail.
Yeah. And there's got to be a role from the regulator to protect consumers from being put onto plans like that that take advantage of their lack of knowledge.
Yes, there is talk about that in the mainstream media to make a minimum, in this day and age,
minimum standard,
and that would be a plan of 3 gig, no less.
Right.
Which would be very... because at the moment, Telstra are locking into 200 megabits for 3 years. 200 megabytes for 3 years. Do you think that's...
so good? By...
read the fine print, everybody.
So yes, by acting in this way, Telstra are bringing on their exact regulation they're trying to argue that they...
well, you're locked into
have
a contract for 3 years, but you're not locked into 200 megabytes.
No,
you can change your plan as you see fit and
that's
pay more for it.
Yes.
You know, and you can change it any time.
In all fairness. Hmm. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. If you have something you would like to add to this debate, because it's fairly fiery over here, I'm glad I'm on this side of the table, 1-300-664-882. If you give us a nice voice message, we will give you a collector's edition Tech Talk Radio coffee mug, as designed by Dr. Ron, and he's been relegated to coffee making at the moment because he's not here again tonight.
Yeah, he's. I've almost forgotten him. He was here a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, the little fellow, he's gone off. Yeah, I don't know where he is, but
he's shout for the prize.
Is he going to come back at some point?
Exactly, because he hasn't put attention to detail. No, I think he's coming back. Yeah.
Oh, good.
So, and feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. If you'd like to add something to our discussion right now, you can do so. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy. It's child's play.
Podcasting's so easy, even my little brother can do it.
Step one, visit the iTunes Music Store and search for Tech Talk Radio in the podcast section. Step two, click subscribe and you're done. Now every week you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn, on a train, in a car, on a plane, at work,
visiting the relatives, washing the car. Pressing.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Just an interesting little statistic for you boys. We're getting, since Dr. Ron hasn't been on the show...
and Mark and I have been in together having punch-ups.
Exactly. We're averaging over 2,000 visitors a day to the Tech Talk Radio website. Now, that's not a bad statistic, is it?
No, it's a good one.
A big thank you to all the people who've taken the time to come and look at that website.
A lot of them are all from Australia too, which is good, but we have a lot of... the US is pretty big. They like us over there too. By the way, did you know if you Google Tech Talk Radio in the US, we beat the American version?
That's fantastic.
I thought that was good. So thank you to everyone who comes and visits and downloads stuff. But yeah, send us your emails. Ring up, vent on whatever you want to vent on. 1-300-664-882 is our phone number. Jeff Dudley has sent us in an email. He's on Optusnet. His data rate is 600 kilobits per second. That's not too bad. Don't know whether it's DSL or whether it's cable or something like that. So I think Optusnet is ADSL, so that's good. He goes on to saying that our line speed is 3.3 megabits per second and your download speed is 379 kilobits per second, which is lousy. Thank you, Jeff. Send them in, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au. Lydia Davis is our correspondent who lives in Palo Alto, which is Silicon Valley in the United States. I did have a chat to her during the week, and we're going to talk a little bit about robots.txt files.
Oh, yes.
Familiar with those little suckers?
Absolutely.
Basically, what they do is they're a little file that lives on your web server which tells the search engines what to look for.
What to index and what not to index.
Okay, and we're also going to talk about spiders. Now, not the creepy crawly spiders, but the
like
little
spiders.
Robots, the engines, the software that comes in and does what we just talked about.
Oh, they're all right, yeah. So, I don't want that type of spider.
Yeah, no, they're pretty harmless. And then there's another thing, a 404 error. Do you know what that is?
Oh, only too well.
Okay, a lot of people don't know what a 404 error is until they come across one. And normally
it means you've asked for something that isn't there.
That's right, but it's completely unrelated. It takes you to the ISP's page, or it takes you to whoever's, the hosting page, and they try and sell you things and all
that
sort of stuff.
Yeah, never used to be like that, did
anyway,
it?
Anyway, no. Things are changing. Here's Lyd from the United States, and she's going to tell us what's going on.
One of the things that I suppose search engines get the question, how do you know what part of the website, as a search spider, how does it know what to index and what not to index? And one of the ways that webmasters can stop something being indexed is with their robots.txt file.
Now, this is a file that just lives on your web server, and it just sits there in the root of your web server, and anyone can see it. Including the search engines.
Yeah, and it's an exclusion file. So basically what's happening is you're saying don't allow the spider, whichever the spider it is, whether it's Google, whether it's Yahoo, whether it's, you can select who you would like to keep out, and then also you can select what you would like to keep out. The problem that I'm noticing just within sites around here, and I'm talking about sites with that are run by people that really know what they're doing in terms of search engines and in terms of web mastering, what they're doing is they're putting into their robots.txt file, don't index this page, don't index this page, and then they're giving the URL. And that's how you have to do it in terms of, you know, for the robots.txt file to understand it. You have to put in disallow this, disallow that, and you put the URL in. So what's happening is people will look at this and then say, oh, cool, so you have a file on your site, which is, you know, www.techtalkradio.com.au/secrets. And you're telling the search engine not to look at that. But, I mean, it makes me, as someone who's just curious, think, huh, what do you have?
What are we hiding?
File? Yeah. So, of course, I look at it, and in there could be all sorts of stuff, and people aren't covering stuff. So what I've found, and this is really bizarre, is budgets. For huge corporations.
Oh, really?
In Silicon Valley. Yes. And so this is why I cannot tell you who it is, because I'm trying to fix this thing right now. But there's companies that have information about various things, including budgets, including their last financial year's audit up there, because they need to access it very quickly, that they're saying, hey, we don't want Google to search this and index it because we don't want it out there in the search world. But like I said, if anyone knows anything about computers, they look at the robot.txt file and they go, hey, I can look at this, and they can.
But that's hardly what you would call very secure web technology. Like, why wouldn't they just put it behind a password-protected page? Like, that takes 2 seconds for any half-handed web person to set up. It's not really a big job, so...
It is. It can be a big job. I mean, you look at, you know, if you're administering your own server, of course, it's very different. But, I mean, if you're looking to someone that has all your information on there, you've got to go by their rules, so it depends. So people do this. And not realising that, hey, I'm giving out, you know, basically, you can look at this stuff. There's a website at www.robottext.org, which is run by a guy called Martin Kostra, who, like I said, started AliWeb. That was the first web search engine after Archie. It was based on Archie. And he has all the exclusion standards in there, what you can do, what you can't do, in terms of, you know, it doesn't accept wildcards within the disallow command.
Yeah.
I think you can use it in agents, but you can't use it in the actual command. There are other things you can do. If you do want to keep that stuff up on your website, you know, you should be doing things like having no follow in your HTML, in your metacode, or in your meta name. You know, you say no follow or no index, so the spider won't do it, but you've got to make sure that you're not linking to that page, because if you link to it, bang, the spider's got it. So there's just something, it's just something people should keep at the back of their minds.
No,
if they've
exactly.
got a robot, don't put, for God's sake, do not put any private information in there. I just found it really strange that a company would put that sort of information out there. And it's not that they want to, it's just that this is the easiest way for them to do it right now.
Well, I think they've only got themselves to blame in a lot of respects, because if they're not going to hide it behind a password-protected page, then that's fair game for anyone. And, of course, a robots.txt file, it really keeps the honest robots out. There's no protocol that actually says robots must adhere to a robots.txt file. So any more of the unscrupulous search engines, whether it be for good or for evil, could actually get in there and index that page.
But it's just interesting, something I'm noticing lately. Google have recently on their webmaster blog, and if you are interested, go to the Google webmaster's blog and you'll find, I think the last 2 weeks they've talked about it, and you know what you should be doing, what you shouldn't be doing. It's okay. Quite interesting to talk about.
What else? Tell me about error 404 pages.
Are you near a computer?
I am.
Go to Apple's website and then type in some garbage at the end.
www.apple.com/garbage. Looking for something at apple.com, yeah? No, not really. I was just told to go here.
Do you see what they've done?
Yeah, they've turned their 404 page into a search page.
Really? They've turned their 404 page into a really well-optimised search page. You know, there's two types of users. People that click on anything, they don't know what they're doing, and then there's the people that know what they are doing. Now, the ones that are clicking on things that don't know what they're doing, they get a message that says error 404. They can go, what is that? And they have no idea, and they really don't know what to do with themselves. They go back a page, and they try again, and they think, you know, hang on, what's happening? Apple are really clever, I think, in terms of what they've done with that page, because they've said, okay, you've made a mistake. Either you've made a mistake, we've made a mistake. Somewhere along the line, there's a mistake. This page no longer exists. But where would you like to go? And then they give you options. They say, hey, would you like to go to our products? Would you like to go to our media center? Would you like to go here? Would you like to go here? And they walk you through the steps in terms of search optimization, in terms of making your site really visible to Google and Yahoo and Live. This is the sort of error page you should have that describes what an error 404 is in very simplistic words, because the people that know what it is, you know, they know, and they're going to go, okay, cool. But they're going to like it a lot more because they don't have to hit the back button and try again or whatever the case may be. So they have the options of going to all these other places within the site. So you're linking back to internal pages on your own site, which is really helpful.
One of the other interesting things about this for... Yeah, I think it's a terrific thing. As you said, it's certainly makes it interesting for Google when it goes out and indexes pages. It sort of puts you in a very linked-up state, and that's what Google likes. But I'm just wondering about people who don't actually have access to write a 404 page on their website. They're still going to be stuck with the old, this page doesn't exist, and 9 times out of 10 it'll put up the ISP's page saying that page can't be found. So... unless you're on one of the better sites. Well, unless you're on one of the better sites, you'll be able to do it. There are some hosting companies that allow you to do it.
Yeah, that's what I thought the hosting companies would ultimately say yes or no, because, I mean, we're working on a website now and we're looking at, you know, in there, I'm putting everything. I'm putting links to a blog, I'm putting links to the media centre, I'm putting links to about, you know, this is who this company is, I'm putting links to who the team members are. You know, so these are the sort of things that you want to be linking back to if you can, and I suspect... most people can, you just have to learn how to do it. And you know, technology, you can do it, you just have to know how.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
If you want the latest Tech Talk Radio on your smartphone or PDA, visit the new Tech Talk Radio website, ttr.mobi. This is a lightweight website designed especially for small screen devices, so it loads quickly and provides easy navigation around our most popular links. You can find out what's on the current program, check show archives, and access links to the regular website. Remember, for the latest Tech Talk updates when you're on the move, go to ttr.mobi.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Another great use of MP3 technology is being done by the Australian Broadcasting Corporation in Melbourne in particular.
Yes.
And it's called a pod tour. Now, this is ingenious. It's like when you go into the art gallery and you get a bit of a guided tour as you walk around the art gallery. But
where
here they are.
Where they give you a little CD player sort of thing.
That's right. But here they are doing it on the MP3 player. So you whack your earphones on your head and you go for a stroll through the city. So if you're touring Melbourne very shortly, be sure to visit the ABC website in Melbourne and download the PodTours thing and go for a walk.
If you're a visitor to Melbourne, even Melbourne locals are going to get something out of this. I really enjoyed listening to the one I've listened to. I didn't actually do the walking tour because I was in a hurry. I wanted to listen to it in time for the show. Mm. So I listened to it on the way home. And it's fantastic. It's got all sorts of little bits of information that you could... I mean, you could live and work in the centre of Melbourne and there's still things that you would never know. And it takes you through all the interesting places.
And I guess it's the great thing about it is you can hit the pause button at any time you like and indulge in what the socialites do the best in town, and that is have a good meal or
that's right.
Have a good cup of coffee or something like that. So,
yep.
I just thought that was a really, really good use of the new technology.
It
as well
really
as listening
is.
To people like us.
And do we know if the ABC is going to expand it to other... regional centres and cities?
I have no idea.
I would hope so. It's such idea. It's only being done in Melbourne at all, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, I had a bit of a look on other sites and I couldn't see it in any of the other stations, but I think Melbourne ABC is leading the pack in a lot of respects with what their content is online too.
It's done in conjunction with Melbourne University as well, who've provided some of the information too. So it's very, very interesting.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the 20th birthday of mobile telephones, would you believe? We've had them for that long now.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Cast your mind back 20 odd years. There were these things called bricks. You used to probably have one, didn't you, Mark? I just imagine.
No, I didn't actually have one. I had a car phone. Which I used, which was fantastic. I think it was called a Philips Traveller. It was fantastic. It worked really well.
It's really hard to believe that we've had mobile technology for 20 years. I bet you 20 years ago we would never have thought we'd have the dilemmas we've got today.
Yes.
Yeah,
it's a bit of a different world.
The first portable phone, I was in a different part of Telstra at the time. First portable phone I used was like, I think it was called an attaché, and you'd carry around this heavy thing with a little battery gauge on the top of it, and you picked it up and it had a cable off to the phone. It had push buttons on it. That was pretty fancy.
Cool. Do you remember Mel Ward?
Yes.
Were you there in his day?
Yes, I was.
He was a legend. I thought he was really good at the helm.
He was an engineer, a real engineer rather than a...
Well, on February the 23rd in 1987, Mel Ward, the then Managing Director of Telecom Australia, made the nation's first mobile call on a Mitsubishi Electric handset from the Sydney Opera House to the then Federal Communications Minister, Michael Duffy. I bet you they probably didn't have a slanging match like someone would today. So there you go. And that was on the old, the new service replaced the limited mobile network known as the mobile telephone system 007 or PAMS.
007 one, yes.
Which was introduced in 81.
A cellular system, but it was, used to have
so this is 20 years since the first cellular system. So this is the analog mobile phone service.
Hey, and you couldn't text on those phones either. Yeah.
What were they? The 018 numbers that we used to have.
That's correct. Yep, and you couldn't text. That's exactly right.
Yep.
And you couldn't data, you couldn't do anything. You had to use a telephone for goodness me, what a telephone was for.
That's
you had to pick it up, dial numbers, and you'd talk to somebody.
Yeah.
That's really an odd.
But I must just say, though, I mean, they say that's the first call. The two networks I've seen the launch of, definitely the engineers make the first call because you don't give it to a politician and say, make a phone call and we all cross our fingers hoping it works. First time. You know, it's all sorted out well in advance.
Do you remember the cost of those things? They were frightfully expensive.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
I saw it on paper here, $4,000 and it lasted 20 minutes of talk time or something, you know, for the first carry-around one.
Yeah, you know? It was frustrating. And remember back then, too, you used to, as part of your telecommunications bill, you were had to be charged some radio communication, like the like Department of Communications at the time used to get their $5.50 radio license fee. You know, everyone wanted their bit. Whereas these days, everything's come back to normal now and we just pay a phone bill, sort of a cap. Right. Some of us pay more than others, but at the end of the day, it's gone back to civilization. But that's 20 years ago. I find that
And the
just
first
like
ones
yesterday.
They sold, they were really disappointed because they always thought they were going to sell it to the men in business suits, the upper executives and that sort of thing. And the first guy who came in, this is the story an old manager used to say, came in was like a wood chopper. And and they realised that the whole business was about the tradesmen and getting, you know...
Getting tradesmen on it,
yeah. And that's where the big money was to be made. They realised after the first guy connected and, you know, they had all this hoo-ha and all the media there that it was actually going to be tradesmen then who were going to buy the system.
So who's the target market these days? Young semi-professionals? Or are you still
Don't
the tradies?
The target market these days is everybody.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Absolutely everyone, from grannies through to kids.
Yep. Do you know anybody who doesn't have a mobile phone?
Yeah, I do, actually.
Really?
Yeah, my father.
There you go.
He's got a SIM card, but he hasn't got a mobile phone.
My mum and dad have both got them.
Long story.
Yeah, my mum doesn't.
Yeah?
She wants one, but dad won't let her have one.
All right, so there you have it. Cast your mind back. There's kids of today that don't know life without a mobile phone.
That's right.
18-year-olds and all that. There's always been some form of mobile telecommunications around at the time. The Odd Spot is coming up next after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1300 664 882 and leave a voice message. That's 1300 664 882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au and click on the feedback link.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Son of a... Oh!
This week's Gadget of the Week is the... Torian Portable Internet Radio.
I want one of these. These are good. I need one.
Dick Smith Powerhouse. I don't think it's from Electronics. Dick Smith Powerhouse. It is a... Basically, it looks like a radio. It's a sort of square-looking thing with buttons and, as you'd expect, a sort of MP3 player thingy to look these days. What it actually is actually uses a wireless 802.11b connection to connect to the internet.
And so you like your laptop, just turn it on and it works if you've got an unlocked or even secure thing in your house or your business or wherever.
You stick your internet radio stations in it and it plays them in MP3, real audio, AAC and OGG, which I've never heard of before, formats.
OGG, yeah.
Oh, you okay? Yeah, well, I'm not right up with these things, you know.
All right, that's good. So good gadget. I think these will become quite prolific, I think, in time to come too.
FM receiver, time shift recording, the whole works.
Fantastic. The one of the very first ones, I think, available in this country. I haven't seen them in the retail shops before. So that's it, the Tech Talk Radio
Gadget
of the Week.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
Here's one which I use quite frequently. If you're into video production, anything, DVD players, the works, and you have a question about it, if you visit a website called videohelp.com, they will answer all your questions. A really, really good resource if you want to know how to convert an AVI to a DVD, if you want to know whether your DVD player will play certain types of media, what you can record on, or even if you're looking for a review of a specific device, I find it a really handy thing. Have you been there, Graham, at all?
Oh, absolutely. They're a great site. I've used them frequently, particularly for finding out how to convert one format into another.
Yep.
But all those sorts of video tools that you use if you work or play with that sort of stuff, they've got info and up-to-date information and safe places to download the tools.
Yep. It's a great website if you're looking for it, videohelp.com.au.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Shoot. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Just delete the AU on that URL. Our last one for the week. This is the Odd Spot, England's West Country farmhouse cheesemakers have put their webcam on maturing cheddar cheese to let aficionados watch in real time the process of mold growing for a year. Now, this is up there with watching grass grow, I would have thought. It puts watching paint to dry in the in the shade, a company spokesman admits. www.cheddarvision.tv boasts 85,000 visitors a day. So there you have the Tech Talk Radio odd spot of the week. It's been a pleasure. Thank you, gentlemen, for your stimulating conversation on Telstra tonight. It's been a terrific show. I've learnt a lot. And we'll do the same thing again next week.
Always fun.
And with a bit of luck, we might see Dr. Ron. We're running over. So till next week, bye for now.
Tech Talk Radio is brought to you each and every week by a band of dedicated professionals from within the broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer and host Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Sir Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Production facilities are courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night from 8 p.m. The producers wish to thank all the stations that are taking the show, including 3WBC, 3XX, Cairns FM and 4KZ. For syndication, sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit the website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.